TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Bruce Gagnon, The Ongoing Danger of Militarization of Space. This archival program by TUC Radio is designed to follow last week's commentary on Donald Trump's launch of the Space Force. That's the first new U.S. military service in more than 70 years. At several ceremonies on and around December 27, 2019, Trump declared that now space is the world's new warfighting domain, and that the U.S. would seek dominance in space. The talk you are about to hear now was part of a two-day symposium on the dynamics of nuclear extinction, organized in 2015 by anti-nuclear campaigner Dr. Helen Caldicott. In 2017, Helen Caldicott edited a book with materials from that symposium entitled Sleepwalking to Armageddon, and this talk by Bruce Gagnon is one of the chapters. Dave Radcliffe published on his well-researched site, Rathaus Reality Press, a transcript of this talk that is alive with links to institutions, treaties, and related writing mentioned in the talk by Bruce Gagnon, all designed to give background and material to this new danger made ever more imminent by Donald Trump's launch of the Space Force. Here's the 2015 event at the New York Academy of Medicine. The ongoing danger of militarization of space and nuclear war. Bruce Gagnon is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. That's an international organization he co-founded in 1992. They have an over two decades record of education and activism on a rarely covered topic, the weaponization of space. Bruce Gagnon took an extraordinary political journey. As vice president of a young Republican club in Florida, he volunteered in Richard Nixon's 1968 presidential campaign, and he was ready for the draft into the Vietnam War. His change in consciousness began with a small group of Vietnam War protesters. They stood outside an Air Force base in California, where he was stationed. Today, Gagnon remains an active member of Veterans for Peace. His new life began with the United Farm Workers. He organized fruit pickers in Florida. For 15 years, he coordinated the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice. In 1987, he organized the largest peace protest in Florida's history. Over 5,000 people marched on Cape Canaveral in opposition to the first flight test of the Trident II nuclear missile. It took another 10 years until Gagnon's work received any media attention. He was the organizer of the Cancel Cassini campaign. The spacecraft Cassini was sent to the planet Saturn with 72 pounds of plutonium on board. When the spacecraft launched on October 15, 1997, on top of a Titan rocket, those who knew about the devastating explosions of Titans in years prior held their breath. The risk of spreading 72 pounds of plutonium in a launch accident was extremely high. Only a year after the Cassini launch, the Titan had its worst accident and was discontinued. My personal connection to the Global Network began in 1996. Helen Caldicott introduced me to Bruce Gagnon. TUC Radio was one of the few media that covered the Cassini launch before it occurred. I also made an effort to attend the annual meetings of the Global Network and found the range of topics and the international attendance very impressive and moving. Bruce Gagnon was one of the speakers at the two-day symposium on the dynamics of possible nuclear extinction that was organized by the anti-nuclear campaigner and physician, Dr. Helen Caldicott. Here's Bruce Gagnon.
I live in Bath, Maine, where Navy destroyers are built. These ships are outfitted with so-called missile defense systems that the Pentagon is today using to help encircle Russia and China. Few people in our community, including activists, are interested in where these ships go or what their military mission actually is, especially when Bath Iron Works is the largest industrial employer in our state. Soon after George W. Bush became president, he pulled the U.S. out of the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the ABM Treaty, that we had with Russia. That treaty limited the deployment of missile defense systems that are key elements in U.S. first strike attack planning. This led to the creation of the Missile Defense Agency, and today we see U.S. deployments of missile defense systems on the land and on board Navy ships being used to surround Russia and China. Each year, the U.S. Space Command conducts a computer war game in which they practice a first strike attack on Russia and China. They call it the Blue Team against the Red Team. And in this war game, the first weapon, an attack on China, is the successor to the space shuttle, the military space plane, that during testing has shown that it can stay in orbit for over a year without a pilot on board. It's really a super drone. In the computer war game, the military space plane drops down back towards Earth and hits China. Other weapon systems, under the direction of Strategic Command's Prompt Global Strike program, are then used in a further strike. When Russia and China, in this war game, attempt to fire their remaining nuclear forces, our missile defense systems are used to pick off any retaliatory strike, thus giving the Pentagon a quote-unquote successful first strike attack. Thus, missile defense, or should we call it missile offense, is the shield that is used after the U.S. first strike sword is thrust into the heart of another nation. Russia and China have repeatedly said that any hopes for real nuclear disarmament are out the door as long as the U.S. continues to test and deploy these missile offense systems. They are destabilizing and make the reality of launch on warning more of a problem than ever. Today, the U.S. is deploying land-based and sea-based missile defense systems, including radars, in Romania, Poland, and Turkey, and on ships in the Baltic, Mediterranean, and eventually the Baltic, Barents, and Bering Seas. These deployments are directly aimed at Russia, although the Pentagon claims that they are intended for Iran, which we know is not true. Coupled with the hyper-aggressive NATO expansion up to the Russian border, Moscow has been forced into a red alert corner. Just this week, the U.S. Army 2nd Cavalry Regiment, driving armored personnel carriers and other military vehicles, rolled through the streets of Narva, Estonia, just 300 yards from the Russian border, a dramatic escalation of the insane Pentagon military confrontations that are being created in Eastern Europe. The U.S. is just poking Russia to get a response. Imagine if the reverse were happening and Russia was deploying military forces in Canada or Mexico. We'd go freaking ballistic. The U.S.-NATO-directed coup in Ukraine has led to a civil war that is intended to create chaos on Russia's border. The eventual goal is regime change in Moscow, all to benefit corporations that want to control the largest supply of natural gas on the planet, sitting under Russian soil. Couple that with the melting Arctic ice, which has fossil fuel extraction corporations drooling at the thought of control of the Arctic region. The U.S. Navy recently sent a nuclear submarine into the Arctic, with New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman along for the ride. In his column afterward, he quoted Jonathan Greenert, the chief of naval operations, saying, quote, "In our lifetime, what was in effect land and prohibitive to navigate or explore is becoming an ocean, and we'd better understand it. We need to be sure that our sensors, weapons, and people are proficient in this part of the world so that we can own the undersea domain and get anywhere there," unquote. Just take a look at a map and note that Russia has the largest land border with the Arctic Ocean. At the same time, these missile defense systems are being positioned in South Korea, Japan, Okinawa, Guam, Taiwan, and on Aegis destroyers throughout the Pacific Ocean. They're aimed at China, though similarly, Washington claims they're in response to North Korea, which we know is a lie. Last October, I organized a peace walk through Maine to help shine a light on our state's growing dependence on military spending. We began the walk up in the beautiful mountain and lakes region called Rangeley, where the Pentagon's Missile Defense Agency is considering putting up to 60 ground-based missile defense interceptors. Narrow winding roads would have to be bulldozed and widened, and huge holes would have to be blasted into the mountains in order to insert the missile silos. Toxic rocket fuel would be trucked in and stored on site, the same rocket fuel that is now contaminating water sources in 22 states across the nation. The whole plan would be an environmental disaster and would cost taxpayers more than $4 billion. Come to find out, the Pentagon didn't want this expensive program, but pressure on Congress from the Boeing Corporation forced it to go forward with an environmental impact statement process and public hearings in four states, including Maine, to select a possible East Coast deployment site for a missile defense base. Another major weapons program being built that the Pentagon did not actually want is also in Maine. General Dynamics owns Bath Iron Works, where destroyers for the Navy are built. The standard Aegis destroyer cost about $1.5 billion and are outfitted with these missile defense interceptor missiles, which have had much success in their testing program. But after Obama became president, he forced the Navy to build the new high-tech stealth destroyer called the Zumwalt, the job of which is to sneak up on China and blast it with new electromagnetic rail guns and other weapon systems. This is part of Obama's pivot of 60% of U.S. military forces into the Asia Pacific to provocatively confront and control China. As it turns out, the majority stockholders in General Dynamics are the Crown family from Chicago, who helped Obama get elected to the presidency. So he owed them, and the new Zumwalt stealth destroyer, at a cost of taxpayers of between $4 and $6 billion each, is their reward. As part of the U.S. pivot to China, the Pentagon needs more airfields for warplanes, more barracks for troops, and more ports of call for the warships being redeployed into the region. So in places like Jeju Island, South Korea, we see a 500-year-old fishing and farming culture being torn apart and UNESCO-recognized World Heritage soft coral reefs just offshore being destroyed as a Navy base is being built for U.S. nuclear submarines, aircraft carriers, and the destroyers made in my hometown of Bath. In the U.S. today, more than 60% of every federal discretionary tax dollar goes to the Pentagon to fund the cancerous war machine. Our communities have become addicted to military spending as our physical and social infrastructure continues to deteriorate. There is virtually no money for anything else these days as we witness austerity cuts in social programs all over the nation. The Pentagon says that America's role under corporate globalization of the world economy will be security export. We won't have conventional jobs making things useful to our communities anymore. Instead, we'll build weapons for endless war and send our kids overseas to die for the fossil fuels corporation. In fact, today, weapons are the number one industrial export product of the nation. And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line? What does it say about the soul of our nation that we have to keep selling weapons and killing people in order to provide jobs so workers can feed their families? The Pentagon has the largest carbon footprint on the planet, but sadly there is little acknowledgement of that fact by most climate change groups, which well illustrates to me the off-limits nature of the growing military domination of our society. We've become an occupied nation. The corporate oligarchy that runs the show in Washington uses space-based technologies to spy on us and to direct all warfare on the planet. In a way, you could call today's expensive military satellites the triggers that make the high-tech weapons like drones and offensive missiles work. These satellites allow the military to see everything, to hear everything, and to target every place on the planet. We're sold the line that high-tech robotic warfare will save American lives and will be a cheaper way to fight. The military-industrial complex has become the primary resource extraction service for corporate globalization and is preparing the future generations for its dead-end street of perpetual war. Due to the fiscal crisis across the nation, engineering departments, computer science, mathematics, astronomy, and chemistry departments in colleges and universities have become increasingly dependent on Pentagon funding. In the U.S., approximately 40% of all scientists, engineers, and technical professionals today work in the military sector. This is a colossal waste of talent and intellectual resources as we face the coming reality of climate change. Another key reason for the militarization of space is resource extraction on the planetary bodies. One of the Space Command jobs will be to control the pathway on and off the planet Earth. Some years ago, the Congress commissioned a study, and it was published, called Military Space Forces, the Next 50 Years. And in there, this book, it was published as a book, signed by the likes of John Glenn and Senator Bill Nelson from Florida. They talked about controlling the Earth-Moon gravity well, controlling who could get on and off the planet Earth, and that with control of the Earth-Moon gravity well, we would be able to hijack rival shipments upon return. The aerospace industry says it needs nuclear power in space for mining the sky. Nuclear reactors on rockets will be needed to give them the kind of lift capability to reach Mars. International space law is now being rewritten by corporate interest to allow their control of the planetary bodies. The industry plan is to scrap the United Nations moon and outer space treaties. Rovers on Mars are currently powered by plutonium-238. I organized campaigns to oppose nuclear launches from the Space Center in Florida in 1989, 1990, and 1997. Future mining colonies on the planetary bodies would be nuclear powered, necessitating a host of launches of nuclear materials into space on rockets that blow up from time to time. Space entrepreneur Elon Musk says we must move our civilization to Mars. The Mars Society says that the Earth is a rotting, stinking, dying planet, and that we have to terraform Mars to make it habitable. Imagine how much money that would cost. When the Civil War and the Indian Wars ended, the military-industrial complex at the time saw an end to their massive war profits. They needed an enemy to keep the military production lines humming. So a strategy was developed. Journalists and artists were paid to fabricate stories about Crazy Horse, the great Lakota warrior, who had been brought onto the reservation in South Dakota in 1877. They reported that Crazy Horse had broken out of the reservation and gone back on the warpath, killing innocent white children, raping white women, and burning their houses to the ground. These stories were printed in major newspapers across the nation, and the American people were afraid and outraged. Congress swung into action and appropriated more money for weapons production, while Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull sat inside their teepees on the reservation without a gun to their names. Similarly, in our time, we've seen the military-industrial complex fabricate stories about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And today we see ISIS, which has been trained, armed, and funded by the CIA, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan, as the justification for the U.S. to get back into Iraq and bomb Syria. Putin has been demonized by the Western media, creating the false notion that he is on the warpath to recreate the former Soviet Union. Studies by the Economics Department of UMass Amherst reveal that military spending creates the fewest jobs, while spending on solar, rail, wind turbines, education, healthcare, or repairing sewer and water systems, and our crumbling roads and bridges creates many, many more jobs with the same amount of money. Abolitionist Frederick Douglass reminded us that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. When it comes to our current dark, evil economic system called militarism, we should be demanding its conversion and the jobs that would result from that transformation. Without massive cuts in the Pentagon budget, how can we ever kickstart our needed social transformation? The militarization of everything around us is a spiritual sickness. Lakota holy man Lame Deer talked about the green frog skin, the dollar bill, and how the white man was blinded by his love for the paper money. His spiritual connection to the Mother Earth was broken. It's time to repair the sacred hoop. The integration of the economic conversion issue into the existing work of the peace, environmental, labor, and social justice movements could be a transformative strategy that would unify our disparate efforts and provide the despondent American people with a positive vision for the future. We don't have time to waste. Thank you all very much.
That was Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. That's an international organization with an over two decades record of education and activism on a rarely covered topic, the weaponization of space. He spoke on February 28, 2015, in New York City at the Symposium on the Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction, organized by the anti-nuclear campaigner Dr. Helen Caldicott. Even though there's a huge fascination with space issues in entertainment, Hollywood, and science fiction, the facts and reality of today's conquest of space and the dominant role of the U.S. remain one of the best-kept secrets. This archival program by TUC Radio is designed to follow last week's commentary on Donald Trump's launch of the Space Force. That's the first new U.S. military service in more than 70 years. Bruce Gagnon has also written books listed on the website of the Global Network at www.spaceforpeace.org. That's space, number four, followed by peace.org. However, a big part of his life is direct activism and civil disobedience. In January 2015, he joined a peace walk to the U.S. submarine base for Trident nuclear missiles at Bangor, Washington. He was interviewed by my radio colleague Mike McCormick on KEXP Radio in Seattle. Mike asked Bruce Gagnon at the end of the interview what we can do to bring the weaponization of space to an end.
I think if you want to stop space warfare, if you want to prevent the next use of nuclear weapons, if you want to prevent endless war, if you want to stop the wars in Iraq and Syria and everywhere else, cut the military budget. Defend social justice. Defend human rights. But as you're doing that, make the links, make the articulation. Talk about how the Pentagon has the largest carbon footprint on the earth. Talk about how the Pentagon controls the vast majority of our tax dollars today. There are literally two trains heading on a collision course. One is called endless war, and the other one is called social progress. And what can we do to help make sure that this Pentagon train gets derailed before this collision really comes to a head? So each of us in our own lives, we've got to find a way to defend Social Security, food stamps, social justice, mental health programs, education programs, all the good things that the social progress has brought us. They're all under attack now by these, can I use the word, evil forces that are really running our country and trying to destroy the world. We've all got to become more human. What's the number one job of a human being on this planet Earth today? I believe it's to give the next generation a chance of life and to protect our relatives in the plant world, the animal world, the natural world. That's what it means to be a human. Let's do that. Work together. Hold hands together around the world.
That was Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Their website at www.spaceforpeace.org is an extraordinary resource on a topic that is shrouded in secrecy. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening.